Jim Fester, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder here on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Today, my special guest is a professor of economics emeritus from Texas A&M, a former chief economist in the Department of Labor, who's also served as a director of the Criminal Justice Center and a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis, Dallas, Texas. He's the author or co-author of 6 books, but he's perhaps most noted for taking controversial stands on important and complex issues in relation to 9/11 research. It's a pleasure to welcome him to the Dynamic Duo again. Morgan Reynolds, welcome back.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
This is a real pleasure. You know, in the meanwhile, I have observed that there has been an attack issued from 911review.com, which have, if I recall correctly, is the Jim Hoffman website. And it says, it talks about nonsense as a weapon, that an effective tool for reinforcing the loony conspiracy meme, that is the idea that conspiracy theorists are loony, is the introduction of theories that have no basis in evidence, such as the idea that no planes hit the towers. The association of these ideas with the careful research of investigators in the 9/11 truth movement stands to set back the cause of awakening the larger public to the facts of the attack. And that's on 911review.com. How's that grab you, Morgan?
My good old friend Jim Hoffman. Yeah, there's an interesting experience I had there where my original celebrity in 9/11 occurred beginning June 9th, 2005, when I did this article on the LouRockwell.com website, which is a prominent libertarian outlet. And I had a pretty good piece there in which, I can't remember the exact title, but basically it was, why did the Trade Center towers collapse? I think I used the term collapse. And about the first third of the article dealt with the gashes. How did these gashes get here? And the last two-thirds with the data that we had at the time regarding the destruction of the Twin Towers. And well, Hoffman came out and attacked me vigorously on both issues, but he was particularly upset with my expression of skepticism about the official airplane stories. I didn't at that point, I didn't wasn't locked in as deeply as I am now, because Hoffman, really, his attack, I dealt with our minor differences on the Twin Towers within a month, and he actually put it on his website. The other issue of the airplanes, I did 8 months of work, and Rick Ryder at MIT helped me. And then I came out with that piece in March of 2006, which was my answer. And basically I said, yeah, there's no case for these airplanes crashing and disappearing into the Twin Towers. So the critic actually can help. You know, I was, I'm not fond of being attacked, but this one helped, and I dug my teeth into this. And for all I know, the perps regret Jim Hoffman's attack on me.
Well, let me make a really obvious point, Morgan. How can he possibly know that this is a loony idea if it hasn't been investigated, researched, and the evidence evaluated? How can you dismiss it without having investigated it? And if you must investigate it before you dismiss it, then doesn't that legitimize the investigation?
That's the standard MO of Hoffman and his fellow thugs. And that is, they don't take me on content. They just say, "Oh, it's just a given. It's a presumption on their part that this is a loony opinion," and go from there. So I am a disinfo, or I'm hurting the credibility of the 9/11 truth movement. What credibility? you are preserving a nothing right now. So, and here's what really, there's so many things that bug me about this, but we all come, what'll punch somebody's button isn't obvious. some people, when they hear about the no planes, they go, oh. Or they hear about controlled demolition, or they hear about Building 7. So it's not off-putting universally as they contend. And furthermore, just to make one more point about this, where are their credentials? Where is their expertise on mass reactions? Or they don't show me anything. Since when are they experts on psyops or PR? Unless they want to admit that they've been to NSA and CIA training programs.
And I've been, you know, reviewing your presentation at the Madison Conference and preparing the DVD masters for replication, and you make so many marvelous points, Morgan, not the least of which is, according to the those who want to defend the government's official position, passing through these external steel support columns they could do effortlessly, and yet they're supposed to be shredded to pieces by the internal support columns. Now, what consistency is there there?
There is none. It's a contradiction, and of course there are there is no such thing in nature. Here's another point, Jim. If I'm such a hazard to the 9/11 truth movement, why doesn't the media pick up on this and put me on the History Channel hit job, for example?
Yeah,
I think you had a few seconds in that documentary. But in other words, the only time I got any mass media attention on this was I did a 3.5 minute interview with a Fox News Channel anchor, and that's available on YouTube. But I didn't know what he was going to ask, and they want to ask about airplanes. Well, I gave him my assessment about this. And maybe that might have alarmed a few people, because some others will pick up on this. In fact, Brian Wilson was the anchor, and he said, well, Dr. Reynolds, are you implicating the media in this? And I said, bingo, you got it right on the nose. Yes, I am. The mass media was in on the crime at the highest level.
Well, you know, another simple but telling point you make, Morgan, is that these planes hit at angles, which means one of the wings hit before the other wing. They didn't come in perpendicular, and that would have caused them to spin in either a clockwise or counterclockwise position, depending on which wing hit first, also at the Pentagon, and that rotation would have snapped off their tails.
Right. So there are just so many. I've got dozens of facts and arguments, and Mr. Hoffman or Ms. Ashley or any of the people on the other side of this won't take me on. And, of course, they didn't come to the Madison conference either. I can confidently predict nobody will take me on in public on the airplane, because I will kick their behind so bad that any objective viewer will, if we, you know, were to tally up the votes, the audience is going to say, Reynolds just, you know, he just swamped the opponent. It'll never happen.
Well, you know, Morgan, I'm in my newsletter to the Society of the 10th of October, entitled The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, I addressed this claim that investigation of this issue is unscientific, and I gave page after page after page of evidence that's relevant to this, that shows it's testable and worthy of scientific investigation, which you are conducting. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Morgan Reynolds. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, my special guest, continuing a conversation with Morgan Reynolds about planes, no planes, video fakery, and related issues at the World Trade Center. It's just a great pleasure to have this guy on the air with me again. Morgan, really such a pleasure. And the point I was making as we went to our break was that there's just a monstrous amount of evidence about these things. And for somebody to suggest that it's a clear-cut case, the way in which Jim Hoffman does here, referring to this implicitly as a loony conspiracy meme, the idea that no planes hit the towers, for which there's no basis in evidence, it seems to me just displaces complete and abysmal ignorance of how much evidence is out there. If anyone wants to know what I'm talking about, for example, if you're not a member of Scholars, go to our website at 911scholars.org and just scroll down to New Studies, and you'll find 8 different installments of September Clues, 4 different installments from Genghis, and a lot of other stuff. In fact, it's going to be supplemented supplemented this week with Ace Baker's Chopper 5 composite study, a response by a fellow named Salter, and Ace's rebuttal.
Right, and it's so obvious. Somebody like Jim Hoffman, that is just a smear job. He's saying that I've got nothing, but he won't take on what I really have. It's just a McCarthyite tactic. He's saying Morgan's a communist. Well, let's see your evidence. Let's engage the issue.
Yeah.
So
yes, it's quite ridiculous, and the fact that it is being debated, obviously it shows that it's debatable and that there's evidence that could be advanced on both sides where it's very important to assess it in a very critical fashion.
I don't even know that it's being debated, but I'm putting out my evidence and what I find and the arguments. And to me, of course, as we discussed on your show last Thursday, it's Sir Isaac Newton just beats these guys into the ground. You cannot have an aluminum airplane disappear into a steel and concrete tower and not, you know, lose a panel or a flap. It's just non-starter. And
seats
and,
or bodies or luggage pouring out of
right.
the plane. Debris caught in the entryway, the impact hole. The impact hole should be a perfect cookie cutter outline of a plane is just astounding.
Well, let's pick up. I want to go to my website, nomoregames.net.
Excellent.
And let's click on 9/11 on the left-hand side among the subject areas, and you will see the fourth item down is the Madison What Planes presentation.
Yes.
So I want to just complete our review of what I argued and showed there in Madison.
Excellent.
And, I want to go to pick up on this at slide 81. Let me scroll down here on the side. You need to have that showing. And let's see.
Newton's
laws of motion would be the slide.
Yep, got it.
And we don't have to spend a ton of time on this, but here they are stated. Everybody continues. That's the first law is the law of inertia. The second is the law of acceleration. And the third is the law of reaction, equal and opposite. And then if we go to the next slide.
Well, let me just talk about this briefly,
okay.
Morgan. I mean, you know, just the law of inertia, for example. I mean, can anyone imagine how that plane could be passing through that building without having its velocity altered, which, of course, is motion in a specific direction, when it's being affected by a massive building? I mean, how could that happen without...
It cannot, according to Newton's basic laws here. It cannot. If a force acts on this body, the speed has to change. In other words, it has to accelerate or decelerate. So it's just impossible to have, as shown on many of these penetration or entry videos at the South Tower, there's virtually none. Now, people get into this long debate about the measurement, but essentially there is little or no deceleration, even NIST. The National Institute of Standards and Technology, I'm a big critic of theirs, but we agree because they show little or no deceleration, and that, of course, leads them astray badly, doesn't it?
And, of course, the point, the very simple point you make about, you know, the planes having impacted at an angle, so one wing hit first, it appears to be a manifestation of the second law here, that they're going to have to be thrown off of their course because you have pressure being applied in an asymmetrical fashion.
Right. You got all kinds of change in motion here that should occur under the advertised conditions.
I mean, these are so basic, Morgan.
They are.
The point you make about, you know, according to the official account, the reason you don't see remnants of the plane is because after it just melted through the building, it was suddenly shredded to pieces inside. So it was impervious to any physical damage as it's going through these steel support columns, which should have functioned like a cheese grater and shredded the plane forthwith.
Right.
Left lots of residue external to the building, and instead it's supposed to be taken apart only after it passes through.
Right, after it punches through with most of it but the wingtips. And
it's steel! steel.
It's steel.
Concrete.
I was just reading yesterday. I was searching for information on the steel, and the steel they used in those upper sections, roughly the upper third of each of the towers, was high-strength steel. And that makes perfect sense, because while it was thinner, those box columns were as thin as one quarter inch. You know, they're basically 14-inch square, but it was the highest strength steel. That is, it had 100 KSI per square inch.
Do you think it's a little stronger than a bird in flight?
No bird can damage, flying into that steel can damage a steel, but it can damage an aluminum aircraft.
Do you think those aircraft impacting with that building was more impressive than an aircraft at 5 miles an hour sliding into the side of a terminal?
Right, we're going to deal with that.
Morgan, you know, the more you look at it, the more obvious it becomes that what we're being shown isn't even remotely physically possible.
No,
not
no,
remotely.
And that leads to my my upset over the scientific and engineering community silence here.
Morgan, so many experts across this country have to know better and have not spoken out. It's shameful. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Morgan Reynolds. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. My special guest today, Morgan Reynolds, is an expert in many fields. His background's in economics, which means he's very used to dealing with exact issues using numerical calculations. And in this case, he's been making waves in the 9/11 research community by addressing an issue that most investigators are unwilling to touch, namely the very possibility that not only did no Boeing 757 hit the Pentagon, not only are there questions about the existence of a plane in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, but even in New York City. What was broadcast may well have been fake video intended to mislead us about actually what took place. And based upon that video itself, there's internal evidence of fakery because it depicts physically impossible events, events that even violate laws as basic as Newton's three principles of classical mechanics.
Jim, let me tell you a story about I'm a member of the Mont Pelerin Society, which is an international group of free market-minded economists and like-minded persons. And one time I was in a town next to Cannes, France. It was a glamorous location for this international meeting. And Henry Manny, then the dean of the law school at George Mason University,
yeah.
He's a University of Chicago law and economics type guy. He said, I want you to meet somebody who wanted to meet you. And it turned out to be Professor Julian Simon, who is now deceased. He died in 1998. He was a management professor at the University of Maryland then, and he's best known for probably his book called The Ultimate Resource, which is he was a pro-population growth economists running against the tide, as it were. The ultimate resource referred to the human mind, the ingenuity of man. And Julian came up to shake my hand, and he said, Dr. Reynolds, I really wanted to ask you, how did you get so simple-minded? And just like you and I laughed because I knew exactly what he was talking about, and
yeah.
it was a compliment. And I'd say when you referred to exactitude and math and the like, in my career in economics, I had as all economists do, we're very familiar with modeling. And none of us get blown away. Well, I would hope. Certainly, I don't. I can see right through the models.
And, yes.
And I go to the basement all the time, the foundation.
Yes.
It's as somebody said, you know, the root of the truffle is the whole truffle. And the foundations are everything. And so if you build on up into the 80th story with this elaborate set of hieroglyphics, you know, equations and econometrics, I'm not impressed. Because
yeah.
you better get the foundations right. So
right.
that's
if
what's
the,
going
the,
on here.
If the parameters of the model are not well-founded, your model is indefensible. It's like the old principle GIGO in relation to computers generally, garbage in, garbage out.
That's right on. So if we go to slide 82, we'll get into some pictures here shortly, but in the Madison PowerPoint here that we're looking at, I did a little bit more on Newton's third law, and the law, of course, is equal and opposite reactions. Now, I took an example off the Internet. It was an eighth or ninth grade physics lesson, and the question to the students was, an unfortunate bug strikes the windshield of a bus moving down the road. So this is a case of Newton's third law, where we've got contact between bodies. And the bug hits the windshield. The windshield, of course, simultaneously hit the bug.
That's
so
right.
I ask, which of the two forces is greater, the force on the bug or the force on the windshield?
And, of course, the answer is they're equal and opposite.
Right. Whereas a lot of people will say, oh, it's the force on the bug is larger because the bug gets squashed.
But if the bug were hovering motionless and the bus hits it at 50 miles an hour, that has the same force as if the bug were traveling 50 miles an hour and hit the stationary bus.
Right. So the fact that the bug splatters but the windshield does not, what that means is, that with its smaller strength and mass, it's less able to withstand this equal force
right.
resulting from the interaction. So that's what we have to either remind ourselves or learn in this contact between the alleged contact between an airliner and a tower.
And the airliner is a whole lot like a bug in relation to the building, which is a whole lot like a windshield.
Right. So, yeah, and this business about which one is moving doesn't carry a whole lot of authority to it.
Well, once you get to relativity, I mean, Einstein made it obvious that it doesn't matter which way you view it. You have the same solution.
Well, I don't know if I know that much, Jim. You're talking advanced physics now.
Well, that's a point Einstein made. The whole notion of relativity is you can adopt it's all relative to a frame of motion, Morgan, and you could assume the bus is stationary and the whole world is moving, and the bug is stationary and the whole world is moving in relation to the bug, and you get the same physics as if you assume that the bug is flying in the other parts of the world.
But we're back in the Newtonian world.
That's right. That's where Newton is absorbed within the broader framework of relativity.
Well, if we go to the slide 85, I get a little dig back at the other guys because we already know each force is the same size. It doesn't matter which object was moving. The fact that according to the official story, Jim, the beams and the belts and the steel-reinforced concrete floors broke up and shattered and fragmented and formed an airplane-shaped gash. What? This is Islamic Hoffman-Jones, Bill O'Reilly, 9/11 physics. This can't be what would happen in a real collision of this sort.
Those are made of very high-strength steel in a particularly forceful interacting arrangement supported by concrete. The whole thing has an intricate lattice structure. It's not as though you're only hitting those external steel beams. There's a massive array of steel arranged in a very intricate structure that supports it.
And, if you look at the floors, for example, those were on these trusses that were supporting steel corrugated pans that weighed about 7 tons each, 20 feet by 20 feet. And then there's a 4-inch deep lightweight concrete that's reinforced. So, and the spandrel belts are impressive around the outside, which is where each floor occurs, because those are 52 inches high and 10 feet long and about an inch. Their thickness varied, but there's an awful lot of steel to run into.
Yeah, Morgan, after anyone has looked at your photographic portfolio of how easily these aircraft are damaged, how could they possibly imagine a plane could hit one of those trusses and not be sheared in half instantly?
Instantly.
Instantly.
It's just very familiar to have airliner crashes, to see the disasters that occur fairly regularly. I mean, they're not an everyday occurrence, but nonetheless, we've got a huge history. There's a website called airdisaster.com that shows you what planes look like in real crashes.
Oh, we wouldn't want to go there, Morgan. Stand by. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with my special guest, Morgan Reynolds. Our special guest today, Morgan Reynolds, has created much controversy in the 9/11 research community by persisting and insisting that the evidence contradicts what we've been shown on those videos broadcast in New York on 9/11, videos that purport to show planes, which the government claims were Boeing 767s, hitting the North Tower on the one hand in the Naudé brothers video and hitting the South Tower in videos that were broadcast over CBS, NBC, CNN, and many other channels, which, when you analyze the physics of the events that are being portrayed, appear to be depicting impossible events. And I must say, Morgan, as a philosopher of science, it's always stunned me how willing people are to believe things that are impossible.
Well, if the right authorities are unanimous voice saying it, a lot of people do embrace it unthinkingly. And you need that. That's why you need some other voices. This is like the emperor's new clothes, right? Where
Yes. The
child says, "Hey, wait a minute! All the adults are buying into it."
Hey, I'd be remiss not to kick into the mix that Andrew Johnson has done us all a huge service by collating 500 witness reports that were archived by the New York Times, and discovered that of the 500, only one reports seen an American Airlines plane hit the North Tower. That is a plane that they identified as an American Airlines. Only one reported seeing a plane they identified as a United Airlines plane striking the South Tower. 499 didn't make those reports in either case. In fact, it's a staggeringly small percentage of the 500 who actually report anything remotely consistent with what the government claims.
Yeah, I would. I did some of the work on that, and I think it's he's got some summary numbers, but sort of the order of magnitude is that for every one who claims they either heard or saw a plane and or a hit, there are at least 10 who had none of the above. And to me, one of the most important things, one of the reasons why we went off on that project was, where is all this stuff with this deafening noise? You have hardly any witnesses who report, despite being on the ground of the WTC or nearby, hearing this deafening rock concert front row sound or higher, which is what you would have had. And you would have had it for a few seconds, surely. So, there's almost no reports of that. There are some who do claim, a handful of people out of the 501 that claim such a loud noise. But it's remarkable how many are right there and didn't hear a thing.
That's an extremely powerful counter-indication to the official story, and I think that's an excellent trigger for launching such an investigation.
Well, if we go to slide 88, I did some calculations, and of course people start to, oh, that's not the right calculation, you know, just calculate the weight of the steel on the wall. But if you just take these five floors, they would weigh a handy 100 times as much as the plane. And then the strength of the materials is far exceeds that of an aluminum airplane. So the next question I ask is, well, suppose that the plane had a smaller mass or lower weight, what would happen then? You know, what if it were a smaller aircraft? Well, that's not going to help you in selling the story. It would still be a squashed beer can, or in other words, a smaller plane. So what if a plane were to speed up and fly faster into the tower, goes the question. Well, it's true that the kinetic energy, that it increases with the square of the speed, so it grows, you know, logarithmically here. But so what? the impact force would then be greater, okay, in the collision or the crash. You're talking in the neighborhood of 4 billion joules of energy. But it's still, you've got Newton's third law to deal with. It's still, the force is going to be equal and opposite on the tower and the plane. And the tower, you can't get away from this. It's immensely stronger, heavier, and harder than the plane. So the plane cannot fare well. It's going to be, the destruction on the plane is going to be greater because of the greater impact.
It sort of reminds me of a pitcher, say, throwing a can of beer at a batter who knocks it out of the park. You know, I mean, but the beer can's going to suffer, not the batter.
Well, the beer can is going to get ripped. Yeah, that's a good analogy too. Like you, maybe almost as good as your fist into the engine block. example.
Yeah.
So. I want to now show a few slides that are titled Size Matters.
Yeah.
And we all know this, but let's look at some big vehicle versus the little vehicle crashes. So on slide 90, I show you a Buick that is crushed by a tractor trailer, an 18 wheeler.
Uh-huh.
It's just now the poor passengers in the Buick were killed. Here's one of our favorites, and that is, here's a Toyota Land Cruiser, which is their biggest SUV.
We're talking about 91 now.
Slide 91, and it's under this rather oversized dump truck. And you can see how well this, this is sheet steel, of course, in the body of cars.
I wouldn't have wanted to be in that one, Morgan.
I wouldn't want to be in that Toyota. It's the smaller and less strong vehicle, and it just.
Let's see what we have, like 3,000 drivers and passengers killed every couple of days.
Every month. Yeah.
Every month, 3,000 a month.
Yeah. And slide 92. Now this is really wicked. There are two pictures here. The bottom one is, again, a tractor-trailer 18-wheeler, and this the top one is what remains of a VW Vanagon, which is a type of minivan, and the driver committed suicide by doing a head-on collision into this truck.
It was deliberate.
Deliberate, yeah. And you can read the story there below the slide, but you can see how the truck fared quite well, thank you. I mean, there's damage, but the Vanagon is almost unidentifiable.
I would say if you compare the relative masses, that the relative mass ratio here is much higher, that the plane is far more, the vehicle hitting the big truck is far larger in terms of relative masses than the plane is in terms of the relative mass of the building.
Yeah, that's true if you took into account the entire tower, yeah. And
you may have 100 times for just a segment of it that was hit, right? 100
what's
times.
That?
Is that merely a weight? That's a weight calculation.
When I looked at the weight calculation, I only took into account five floors.
Five floors.
Now, slide 93 shows you a VW Golf or Rabbit running into this farm implement, this farm machinery.
Yes.
And here again... It's
harvester, I think, yeah.
Yeah, some kind of harvester that is rather large, but the poor little Econo car does not fare well, and three were killed. So you can go find these pictures on the Internet when you look at large vehicles colliding with small, and the small ones do not fare well, even though the large ones will suffer some damage as well. And another point I make here on slide 94 is, hey, the debris remains. In other words, you don't disappear these objects the way we were taught you could do at these four sites, right? Where is all the... A Boeing 767 has 3.1 million parts, plus all of the stuff it's carrying. And we hardly saw any of it, and I plan on this show looking at some of the debris, the handful of debris that there was left. Now, the slide 95 deals with this idea of the straw in the tree or the telephone pole, which we dealt with last
time. We'll return to that with my special guest, Morgan Reynolds. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Stand by. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo with Kevin Barrett, where you can catch the Boy Wonder on Mondays and Fridays, and I'm here the rest of the week. My special guest today is Morgan Reynolds, and we're discussing research he's been doing on the possibility that there were no planes, no big Boeings at least, involved in the attacks on 9/11, neither at the Pentagon or in Shanksville or even in New York, astonishingly enough, where from a logical point of view, he's basing much of his argument on what we see depicted in videos that were broadcast over the major networks on 9/11, where those videos depict what appear to be physical impossibilities, which implies that those videos were faked. It raises the possibility that there were no such planes, although one would want to immediately observe that the videos could have been faked in order to conceal features of the planes or of their interaction with the buildings. However, there's a growing body of evidence that suggests that the possibility that no planes were involved in the attacks on 9/11 is a very real one.
Yes, Jim?
Morgan, speak.
Okay, I'm going to skip now to... by the way, we are at nomoregames.net.
That's right.
And then the subject area you click on is 9/11, and you then go to the fourth article from the top, which is the Madison What Planes presentation PowerPoint. And right now I'm on slide 97, and that one says that there were no official crash reports, which is mandatory under FAA Regulation 121. And as you may recall, at least a year ago, Colonel George Nelson, retired of the United States Air Force, did a FOIA to the FBI because they were mandated to do such an analysis at each crash site. And they were noncommittal but denied his FOIA request for national security and privacy reasons. And I think it was the Massawi trial, you know, that was supposedly blocking this. But more recently, at the end of September, if we go to another article, you'll see the FBI rejected a FOIA to see the evidence on the plane crashes. In particular, the requester out in Las Vegas, Nevada, demanded to see any time change parts
right. That
could be matched up with the maintenance log of the alleged aircraft.
Right, because there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these parts in each of these aircraft, and
right.
yet the NTSB has not produced a single one from any of those crash sites.
So that's an indisputable proposition. The government has never come up with one single time change part that's that anybody can verify. They haven't come up with any.
When I was in Los Angeles for the American Scholars Conference, Reynolds, Morgan, Dylan Avery asked me if I wanted to see the FAA, raw data on the plane crashes.
Mm-hmm.
And he broke out his computer and he showed me the spreadsheets. And for the four flights, the data, every box was empty. No data whatsoever.
I like that. Well, if you go to slide 98, here I spend a couple pages dealing with the question, why not use real planes instead of faking it? And one way to begin this, right here I show you this 1984 Orwellish version of President George W. Bush's address to the UN on November 10, 2001. And the quote is, "Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. Well, the way I interpret that is that an outrageous conspiracy theory must be the explanation for the attacks of September of the 11th.
Well, it's so curious he would say it at all, Morgan. I mean, why would anyone who believes in the truth, which happens, in fact, to be a conspiracy theory, be even talking about outrageous conspiracy theories? He'd have so much evidence to support the one that actually occurred that
mm-hmm.
wasn't outrageous that you would never make a remark like this in the first place.
I know, yeah. I think it can only be interpreted as an intimidation ploy especially, of course, given those were the early weeks after September 11th when national unity was the cry and no one was to question the government and media official story.
I don't think there were a lot of outrageous conspiracy theories floating around at this point in time.
No. So they were anticipating their development. And that's one of the most important things about this crime is it's more important to have a well-done cover-up than a well-done execution of the crime. Of course, they want perfection in both dimensions, but the cover-up is really important. And that's one of the reasons why you wouldn't use real airplanes, as I'll explain in a moment. So the perpetrators do want to practice KISS, keep it simple, stupid, because it is such a complicated operation. So where they can, they're going to use the simplest approach.
Well, Morgan, a point you made in Madison that I thought was impeccable is that you have consulted with pilots who say at 500 miles an hour, they could try repeatedly and never be able to hit those towers.
Right. That's a very thin target, 208 feet wide. So, that's one of the many, 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 many problems. Too many things would go wrong with real kamikaze planes. So I've got some of these things that would and could go wrong. For example, what about the Department of Defense reaction? If you have no planes, no real planes, only some radar blips to fool the right people, it eliminates the need for a DOD stand-down order. And because no rogue patriot, and there are many patriots in the military, as we know, and they aren't necessarily going to follow any kind of a stand-down order in an emergency like this. So you don't have any risk on that front, and they'll never find a stand-down order. There is no such thing. Of course, it follows by my discoveries on the no-planes front. Here's another thing that could go wrong, and you just anticipated this. A plane could miss the tower and crash in the wrong place, and then the wrong people, like honest people, would discover that the story doesn't make any sense. It would expose the fraud. You can't risk that. They can't afford anything like that going wrong. Another thing is you could hit the towers, but the perps knew the physics of fragile airliners crashing into steel towers.
Yeah.
They know what we know now in advance.
And
so that isn't the PSYOP effect that they're looking for. They want shock, awe, fear, disorientation.
And most importantly, the point you've made so many times, without planes, there aren't any hijackers. Without hijackers, there aren't any Islamic fundamentalists. Without Islamic fundamentalists, there's no justification for a war on the Middle East.
Right. The global domination project, otherwise termed. More accurately, yes. And if you had real crashes, I don't care where what went right and what went wrong, outsiders would discover that these Muslims, the required hijackers, there's no evidence of that. And maybe the most important part of it is, since I believe the World Trade Center tower events are the most important, is special effects or fakery is really superior to real crashes because the perps are trying to convince a traumatized America that hijacked airliners crashed and jet fuel fires caused the subsequent spectacular destruction at the WTC. So they need to disappear airplanes, and the only way to do that is by special effects.
Even though these are violations of laws of physics and of engineering, too. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Morgan Reynolds. This is Jim Fetzer, your host, with my special guest, Morgan Reynolds. And, you know, Morgan, listening to the blackbird with his sunken eyes, I think how Judy has led so many of us to see things we never saw before in the photographs and records of the destruction at the World Trade Center. And
oh,
I think
yeah.
I think you're doing a marvelous job of bringing us around to understanding so clearly how the events in these videos are physical impossibilities, and therefore the videos have to be faked. And the most reasonable explanation may very well be that no planes were involved on 9/11 at all.
In science and in the law, the strongest evidence is physical evidence. And these physical laws are inviolable, as you pointed out before. They need no human enforcement. And they are tested every day, and they are the whole basis of modern engineering. And you never found one exception, one violation. So how much tighter can you get?
Let's remind our listeners, Morgan, where we are in terms of your slide presentation. We're at Morgan's website, nomoregames.net. Scroll down to 9/11, open, go to the Madison Conference, which is about the fifth item down there. And if you scroll down the Madison Conference, we have just looked at slide 101.
And, I'm back on, I'm reminding myself that here's a very important point about why you wouldn't use real airplanes after you've used the media to convince people that planes did crash, and that is you slow your pursuers. They knew people like you and I would be on the trail. Somebody would. Right, and it might be in the thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions. So you've got to have a cover-up, and using outrageous methods does have this advantage. So you can have the Jim Hoffmans of the world coming and saying Morgan Reynolds is proposing preposterous theories and has no evidence, and he's just here to discredit us as a bunch of loonies like he is. So it's a logic here that is powerful.
There's a lot of bluffing going on, Morgan, because as soon as you ask him, how does he know? What makes it preposterous? Why is he making such a claim? He can't answer. He can't defend himself, basically because the facts don't support him.
Right, because it reminds me of Rosalie Grable, the web fairy, at the Madison Conference, asking Dave Von Kleist, do you believe in Newton's third law of motion? And I never did get an answer. He would stand up and repeat the question.
Well, you know, I got to admit, in retrospect, that some of the frustration experienced by Rosalie, by Holmgren, by Nico, and others seems to me to have been warranted, at least in the sense that, you know, once you see these issues as clearly, for example, as you've laid them out, I think it's impossible to go back and you know, rest comfortable in naive belief that this wasn't a case of video fakery or impossible events being portrayed in dramatic ways for the benefit of the propaganda arm of the American government.
They had a difficult pioneering road to hoe. And here at the end on slide 101, here's the ace in the hole that the official, the perps had, and that is they have poodles in the media. Somebody was just pointing, they can cover up just about anything to the gullible, the overwhelming majority, and they can cover up the glitches. Someone just pointed out today in an article I was referred to that isn't it amazing that in the mass media there hasn't been one investigative report on 9/11? It's just totally taboo. Does that give it away?
Isn't that stunning, Morgan?
It is.
Isn't that absolutely stunning? Not even the New York Times, which, of course, has not only been abysmal here, but abysmal on JFK as well. I mean, it's as though, you know, they can cover in a responsible fashion everything right up to the most important issues.
Right.
And of course, the New York Times is not alone, because we find a similar phenomenon with Noam Chomsky, for example, or I dare say even Amy Goodman, which is acutely disappointing.
It is, and some of my former colleagues, the circles I traveled with, I shoot them off an email every once in a while when somebody inquires about that, and basically these are people who will not go inside the enemy 10-yard line, and I'm going inside the enemy 10. They dance around, most people, between the 40-yard line stripes. So,
yeah.
I want to go now to another piece I've done for those who want to follow along, and that is NIST denies Reynolds' request for correction, preliminary thoughts.
Okay.
If you can, that's the top article in the 9/11 section, which are arranged chronologically.
Okay, and, so go to your home page again. And
go to the home page and click on 9/11, and then you can click on the top article, NIST denies Reynolds' request for correction. And within the next few days, I'm going to have to file my appeal. Of course, NIST denies that they violated Newton's laws, and I insist they have. And if you scroll down past the Roadrunner cartoons, et cetera,
yeah,
there is a little section. They did reply to me, my objections on video fakery, claiming that... oh, no, they did interview and authenticate these videos. They interviewed the photographers, and we have all this data on our secure servers, which are accessible only by our personnel. So I filed a FOIA request to obtain this evidence.
Excellent.
So I haven't gotten their substantive reply yet, but I've got them on the spot there. And in addition,
they've conceded having something that you're entitled to have under the law.
Right, right. And I want to hear what kind of a reason they're going to come up with to deny me access to these videos. And then we have SAIC, which is this Scientific Applications International Corp, who they are the ninth biggest Department of Defense contractor. They're huge. And They're unknown, but they are really big, and they were the had the most personnel contracted out to NIST on the Twin Towers project.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, you guys got to give me this. I filed a FOIA, which they called me this morning and said they didn't receive. So I filed, I want all the contracts and supporting documents on all your contractors. There's some two dozen.
Excellent. Excellent. Great idea, Morgan. As befits an economist, look for the financial records. Stand by. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo, with my special guest, Morgan Reynolds. Special guest today, Morgan Reynolds and I are discussing the evidence for the possibility that the videos of planes impacting with the North and South Tower were faked, and that the no planes may have been involved because they depict physical impossibilities. And at this point in time, we have turned to his request for correction under the Data Quality Act. And I just thought I'd mention, Morgan, before we pursue it further, that it was Jerry Liepart, a brilliant activist attorney in Connecticut, who understood that it would be possible to use the Data Quality Act, which is a legal framework requiring that government reports satisfy suitable standards of evidence and reasoning, as a framework for attacking the National Institute of Standards and Technology shoddy reports where the evidence even contradicts their conclusions, and that you and Judy Wood and Ed Haas have filed a request for a correction that NIST has denied them, but you're now in the opportunity to appeal them. And it seems to me that this is a hugely important legal effort that has the potential to completely shatter the cover-up being perpetrated by the government on the American people.
And I think our QI-TAM cases in the Southern District of New York are even more important. But back to the NIST RFC situation, they only replied to me, really, on three issues that I raised, even though I raised probably two dozen issues claiming their report is in error. And one they did reply to was SAIC, and I said, hey, come on, these guys are part of this bad behavior, bad crowd NIST is hanging out with. And their response was, SAIC is only doing administrative work. Well, I don't believe that. That's one reason I want to see their contract. And they are a technical firm. And if you go look at the 25 personnel, I can't find any job titles. I need to find out more. And furthermore, Jerry Liepart points out that, hey, if they were doing all this administrative work, that might be evidence of compartmentalization, where the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing in this, and so some people may be doing an honest job, but they don't see the big picture about what kind of report is going to actually come out. So I don't really believe them when they say SAIC is not doing any technical work. Furthermore, I would argue that all the contractors are part of this fraudulent report, this project. Now, if you go down to Roman 5, NIST silent on most issues in my RFC. They didn't reply. So does that mean you agree with me? Your silence might be construed that way.
But so there might be more justification in a case like this than there normally would be, because you've been challenging them on these very points and you
right.
expect a response.
And at the end of that paragraph, I say, no time change parts with unique serial parts numbers have been recovered and verified against each aircraft's log. And here I show this document, the second one. There's the request, the FOIA filed by Aidan Monaghan. And here, look at this U.S. Justice, Department of Justice, FBI response to this request. FBI says, this is in reference to your FOIA regarding, quote, documentation pertaining to the debris from all four civilian commercial aircraft used in the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. The FBI then comments, the material you requested is located in an investigative file which is exempt from disclosure. That's their answer, and they
exempt
cite
from disclosure.
It's exempt from disclosure. For an explanation of this exemption, see enclosed form OPCA 16A. I gather they don't even give you a reason. They just say we're exempt from FOIA.
Well, they seem to hint in the next sentence, the assertion of exemption must not be construed as a bar to any additional exemption that may be applied to these records when the investigation is closed.
Mm-hmm. And so a more thorough analysis is conducted.
Well,
so they're just stonewalling it. He wants to see some evidence of airplane debris, and they just stonewall him. Okay, now...
That's really blatant, considering how basic this is to the whole case.
Right. And I want to make another shift, Jim, and that is, if you go back to the 9/11 list of articles...
Right.
I want to talk a little bit about the aircraft debris that was shown to us, okay? And I and Dr. Wood have done some analysis in two instances.
Where do we find it, Morgan?
Okay. The article is why indeed did the WTC, this is just about more than halfway down. This is the article that Dr. Wood and I did in August. Why
right.
indeed did the WTC buildings disintegrate? A peer review. And if you, I would go down to the bottom of the article and then work my way back up
okay.
To some pictures of the landing gear.
Yes.
Okay. Now, on the left here, we see this landing gear under a scaffolding. Okay?
Yeah, a kind of canopy.
Yeah. And, you know, Lord knows how it got there, but we're going to... Look at these pictures. Landing gear, it's got dust. It's adjacent to old scaffolding. It's not on a street corner, you can see in this first picture, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's close to the curb, but it's not hanging over the curb.
Right.
And it's right at about the midpoint of this dusty Greco-Roman pillar that's lying in the gutter.
Yes.
Now we go to the next picture. This is supposedly the same thing. We still have dust. It's old scaffolding. It's not on a street corner. It's close to the curb. However, the ribbon doesn't look quite the same, although they might have taken it hours later. We'll give them a break there. But it looks as if this broken axle is a little closer hanging out over the curb. So
look at the top left, Morgan. There's a crack in the tire. And that crack in these lower photographs is completely missing.
I don't know. It might be just the angle at this point.
No. I'm looking right at it. There's a clear cleft right in the middle at the high point of the tire in the top left. And look at the bottom right. There's no cleft at all.
Okay, I see the break. You're talking about figure 25A.
Yeah, 25A versus 25D.
25D. Oh, yeah, right. That tire looks a lot healthier, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't have that huge gouge in it.
Well, this is the kind of differences we're going to uncover. You might ask yourself, did this thing really come out of a tower with an enormous fireball?
Look
tire. All these tires look a little too healthy, but the one in D in particular does. Yes,
Morgan, the axle configuration adjacent to the wheel is not the same at all in 25B and 25D. Look, 25D is all exposed and open.
It looks a lot more extended in D, yes.
I'm talking, go closer, go right up flat next to the tire and so forth. The mechanism there is completely different. It's even covered in 25A and it's uncovered in 25D. These aren't at all the same.
There's big differences. But some of these are grosser. For example, if you go to C, look at this dust-free street.
Yeah.
In picture C. The scaffolding is shiny new.
Yeah, and 25D isn't anywhere near the midpoint of this Greco-Roman.
Right, yeah. There's been tampering with evidence here, hasn't there?
Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest, Morgan Reynolds. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Dynamic Duo. Today, I'm concluding a conversation with Morgan Reynolds about aircraft and film fakery in New York City. And Morgan, looking at these photographs, I'm also struck that now, of course, you have this landing gear on a corner, as you can see in 25C, whereas in 25A it was not on a corner. And if you look at the scaffolding is now fresh and green and looks brand new in 25C and 25D, whereas it's old and really kind of beaten up in 25A and 25B.
And look at the rehabilitation of that Greco-Roman column there. In
That's
B.
right. It's been spiffing up, too.
Right.
Morgan, weird things going on here.
And you can see in the background that building facade looks like it's constant. That's supposed to be the same street scene. So that's just one example of how this aircraft debris looks like it was salted evidence. Fabricated.
What would be the probability you'd have two landing gear that were on the edge of a street like this at this angle with that partially broken axle with this Greco-Roman thing and scaffolding in the vicinity?
These parts really loved to be found under scaffolding. That if you look down here at the picture of the engine turbine part.
Yeah, but wait, stay on 25A and 25B, Morgan. The broken axle is right on the edge. It's over the curb, and in 25C and D, it's back from the curb.
Right. In other words, you can come up with a dozen discrepancies here that show that they were tampering with the evidence, and they're playing around with it. It's almost like a whistleblower saying, hey, look it, this is fake.
I wouldn't be surprised if the first landing gear were from the wrong kind of aircraft and they had to make a substitution. You know, I've heard that it was from a 737. Maybe A and B are from a 737 and C and D are from a 767.
I was suspicious about the disc brakes because I know what motorcycle and car and truck disc brakes look like, and I actually got the diagrams, and those are valid disc brakes. And, the tire, it's kind of hard to say, but the wheels on a 767 are 22-inch wheels. Now, those may make it, and they have a real high sidewall on them. This thing looks like about the right order of magnitude. I can't criticize that part of it. No direct confirmation that this was from a 767.
But everything else about this looks staged.
Oh, yeah. Now, I want another piece of this analysis is if we were to go to Dr. Judy Wood's website.
Yes.
And
you want to go there now?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I'm going to show you some interesting features about this fuselage part.
Okay, everyone should know. Just go to drjudywood.com.
And then on Dr. Wood's site, you can see the Star Wars directed energy weapons, and go to the holes, page 4. There's it shows you some of the holes from above
Page four some, holes, yes. I'm there on page four holes.
If you go to that one, this takes a while to load up, unfortunately, but because there's
pictures.
so many pictures here.
Where do you want to go?
We want to go to, let's see what the figure number is. I've actually got this in advance, but I'm doing this in slow motion because...
Figure 9B down there.
We want you to catch up. We're going to find a overhead shot. I don't have the number handy here. Here, this looks good.
Murray and Church?
Oh, that's the not the right one. Sorry for the delay. But
9A and 9B?
I should have gotten that, that figure number in advance.
Is it 9A and 9B? How could this piece fly through WTC-2?
Okay. Actually, I want you to go to figure 62, which is about midway down the page.
Okay.
And, Jim, if you look off to the right here, in the little picture, you can see figure 62C, fuselage part atop WTC-5, photographed by Gene Corley. If you click on that, you'll get a larger picture.
Okay, 62C? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I clicked on it.
And now, let's take a look at this. This is the Popular Mechanics, Professor Stephen Jones and others have cited this as this is the real evidence that a Boeing 767 crashed. Okay? Well, look at that fuselage part. Now, look at these other parts. Do they look like aircraft parts to you?
No, they certainly don't.
They look like either aluminum cladding or duct work.
Yeah, they look like siding from a house or building.
The only part is this one little scrap with four windows and a torn off, a fuselage. Now, does that look like it survived a jet fuel fire combustion, to me, it doesn't look burned. It looks more like it's got a primer coating on it.
Yes.
It doesn't certainly have any resemblance to a United Airlines or... Now, this photo was by one Gene Corley, who's a consulting engineer who helped cover up the Oklahoma City bombing.
Perfect.
He's the...
eminently qualified, Morgan.
The date on this is October 25, 2001. Now, let's go back. October 25.
Yeah, you had a lot of time to arrange things by October 25.
Sure did. Yeah, and that is actually a photo taken atop WTC-5. I've been able to verify that with Dr. Wood's help. Now, look at figure 62, which is dated September 23, but that's probably when they filed it. So it was before... it's between September 11th and September 23.
Figure 62, the biggie WTC-5.
The biggie. Now, if you look off to the right on the little photo, figure 62C, you see the alleged location of the fuselage part.
Right.
Now, look at the big one, figure 62, and tell me where you see the fuselage part.
I presume it would be supposed to be in this little box-like thing here to the lower left center.
Between these two raised roof sections of Building 5, there is no fuselage part there visible.
I don't see it.
So my...
We're talking in this rectangular piece next to the big hole on the left there. And the
right,
the two
there's
two.
A pair of holes on the left of that raised roof section.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it should be to the right of those two holes, only between those two raised roof sections. That's where you should find it.
Oh, I see in this alley here, like this little alleyway, this little passageway.
Yes, it's an alleyway.
It's not. I don't see it, Morgan.
There's no that fuselage part is not visible, and from this picture, you can't see any other sign of aircraft debris. It's almost all aluminum cladding or perhaps ductwork.
I certainly don't see anything that resembles it.
My point here is, these photos are about as, when you look at them carefully and apply some reason, they do not stand up. And, Jim, in a court of law, to introduce pictures or videos, you've got to have the original photographer who's
yeah.
willing to testify under oath, subject to cross-examination. You got to have evidence of the chain of custody and evidence for no manipulation.
Yeah.
So most of this stuff...
would get tossed out of court. Would never be admitted.
If they go into court...
Morgan, I can't thank you enough for your terrific work. I want to have you back and soon. Thank you
okay.
so very much.
Thank you.
For being my guest today on The Dynamic Duo. This is Jim Fetzer, your host. Thank you, everyone, for listening.